Hello and welcome to Teaching Here and There, the podcast about hybrid teaching in higher education. We're delighted today to be joined by two esteemed guests from two different continents. We will be talking to Alexandra Mihai, Assistant Professor of Innovation in Higher Education from Maastricht University. And we'll be talking to Mahabali, Associate Professor of Practice at the Center for Learning and Teaching at the American University in Cairo. We've got a fantastic conversation with the two of them coming up. So let's head straight in. We are delighted to be spanning countries and continents in our guests' perspectives at the That Podcast table today. And I'm going to ask our guests to introduce themselves and your current context. What's on your plate at the moment? Alexandra, we'll hand over to you first.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here. I'm an assistant professor of innovation in higher education at Maastricht University. I started about 7 months ago. Before that, I worked at several European universities in Belgium, Germany, UK, and Netherlands. So I have a little bit of experience of, you know, broader angle on higher education in Europe at the moment, hoping to expand that soon. On my plate, I have both research, teaching, and academic educational development, so faculty development. That is an important part of my work. It has been in the past years as well in my previous institutions, but it's definitely about one third of my work here. So I support teachers in implementing various teaching approaches. Of course, in the past 2 years, it's been mainly online blended hybrid, also, generally, just I've been in charge of academic development programs, more broadly speaking, course design, curriculum design, and of course, technology enhanced learning. So just a mix of all of those.
It's a very rounded perspective to bring today, Alexandra. Thank you very much for that. Maha, over to you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Maha Bailey. Really happy to be with you guys and especially with Alexandra. Thanks for pairing us together. So I'm an associate professor of practice at my university's Center for Learning and Teaching. So this is the American University in Cairo, where since 2003, I started my master's in e-learning. So that's how long I've been working in the field of e-learning. Ever since then, my institution has gradually moved to including more and more blended and online learning. And of course, during the pandemic, everyone had to teach remotely. And then towards last semester, so in the spring of 2021, we started to introduce this dual delivery mode. We're calling it dual delivery. In other places, they call it high flex. And I was also supporting them where, you know, you needed to have fewer students in class because of distancing. So, but you would have others joining virtually at the same time. And other than my role supporting professors and designing courses, assessing courses and giving them like workshops, I also have a lot of work that I do publicly, my open education work, especially that I co-founded a grassroots movement called Virtually Connecting. And what we used to do when conferences were face-to-face was include people who do not have access to travel to go to conferences into conversations, hallway conversations happening at conferences. And so there would be people together in a room and then other people joining virtually. And how do you facilitate that kind of conversation so that it actually promotes equity rather than exacerbates inequality? That was a central facet of my work pre-pandemic and still until now. And I've learned, you know, I transfer a lot of what I learn and I practice in my open practices into the faculty development work in more formal educational settings.
And that was when I first met or worked with you, Maha, was an introduction for myself to Virtually Connecting, where I was able to participate in the ALT conference remotely, and you invited me to participate in one of the Virtually Connecting sessions.
Yes, I remember. And then once you were on site at, I think, Digital Pedagogy Lab, and you were one of the on-site participants, right? You've tried both.
So it's nice to be able to get both sides of the fence in this as well. That's great. Just to build on both of those introductions, I'll go back to Maha and then to Alexandra. Do you have anything else to share about your personal experiences or not with synchronous or real-time dual delivery hybrid teaching?
So just to say very quickly, with virtually connecting, when we used to have some on-site and some virtual folks, we learned pretty quickly two very important things. The first important thing was you needed to have someone taking care of the virtual folks to make sure that they got a chance to be heard. And you needed someone taking care of the in-person folks to make sure they were connecting well and that they were listening to the virtual folks. So what there's all kinds of people trying to get technologies and robots and things like that to make these things work. But we felt like the human factor of someone who's taking care of each side really helps make sure that the conversation is equitable. When you think about the particular conference context, the people who are together are the privileged ones. They're the keynote speaker or the people who are able to travel. And the virtual ones are the ones who are not privileged. And it's already an inequitable conversation. So how do you create that? And we also learned, we sort of coined this term, intentionally equitable hospitality, that tries to make sure that as a host of a space, you take responsibility for managing those power dynamics and making sure you sometimes interrupt a powerful person so that the one who isn't gets to speak. And so when my institution started to implement the dual delivery mode, we sort of tried to make them realize that when you're in a room with students whose faces you can see, whose eyes you can see, you are likely to focus more with them than the virtual folks. And how do you make sure that you're listening to the virtual folks without having a very stunted, like stilted type of approach where you're stopping, starting, talking to these, talking to those? How does it feel like one class? And also, I was invited by several organizations to give workshops and keynotes about how does this not become like teaching two courses at the same time? Because you want to be equitable for the students, but you also don't want the faculty teaching to burn out by feeling like they're designing two different courses. And so a lot of what we do at our workshops to our own professors is to say, what is the minimum technology that you can use to make sure that you're engaging both at the same time so that you don't have to design something twice? And also, how does this help you with the uncertainty of possibly having to go fully online later? Because that was actually what happened last semester, is that we went back a little bit face-to-face, and then the government said you have to all go back fully online, and they had to shift to that. So some of the things, I'm just going to give one very easy example, is when we're all fully online, we use something like Zoom chat to make sure everyone participates, right? But if half the students are in the class, you don't want them to have to log into Zoom to participate in that. So what I would suggest in that kind of situation is to use something like a polling tool like Slido or Nearpod or one of those tools to collect everyone's responses both in class and virtual. And then you don't have to do two different things. And so everyone is in the same space doing the same thing, using things like Google Docs or Slack or one space that all of the students have access to, even if they're not all connected to something like Zoom. And then this constant paying of attention is really hard for a professor on their own to pay attention to both at the same time. And so we would suggest if they had like a teaching assistant to be with the virtual folks or in the class, but connecting to the virtual folks, checking if they have questions in the chat, or if they couldn't get a teaching assistant because some courses just don't have that, we were like assign a student to volunteer each class, and it would be a rotating thing where a different student would take on the responsibility of caring for their colleagues. And I think this reciprocity between students is important, especially that in our case, and I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but the who was virtual shifted every week anyway, or every class session. It wasn't the same people who were always virtual and the same people who were always in person.
There's so many rich responses there, Maha. There's a whole set of good practices just in that one response. Thank you. That's absolutely brilliant. I'm going to move it over to Alexandra now. Alexandra, I know that you've been beginning to explore this idea a lot more publicly with your communities on Twitter as well. And again, I think coming from the same sort of perspective that Maha has of looking at it from an equity basis. What would you, and we'll try and keep these questions relatively tight.
Yeah, it's difficult to add something after Maha's answers, because I think she at least mentioned all of the things I have been thinking about. But My experience is a little bit different because I haven't personally taught in a hybrid simultaneous mode. I have a lot of experience with blended learning, so mixing modes, but not simultaneously. But I did have to support quite a lot our teachers in the past 2-3 months because at Maastricht University, we have this hybrid more unplanned, I would say, hybrid mode, because the decision was to go back fully face-to-face on campus in September when the semester started. But of course, by now, 2 months in, it's really hybrid and moving towards online, unfortunately. Fortunately or unfortunately, let's see how that goes because of COVID rates. So the reality was that this was not a planned mode of delivery. And I think that was one of the main issues because in the past year, we have developed quite a good online delivery mode that was pretty successful, I can say, also from the student evaluations and the discussions we had with them for the context in any case. But we went into this year rather unprepared, I have to say, knowingly unprepared, and I think that is a little bit more disturbing, if I can be quite critical, and not really building or not really willing to build on what we learned in the past year. So we had to deliver again a lot of emergency support, this time for a hybrid mode, one which I consider quite difficult, both with pedagogical challenges and with technical challenges if there is not enough support and infrastructure available. And that was the case at Maastricht. And one specific issue is that our teaching approach, our teaching and learning approach, is problem-based learning. So all our programs, bachelor and master, any discipline, every discipline is taught through problem-based learning, therefore small group learning with tutorials. So we don't have almost any lectures. So that made working in a hybrid mode, especially without any previous experience, very, very difficult because imagine a group of 10 people, out of which 8 are in a room and 2 on screen. Nowadays, more like 5 and 5. They have to work together. The teacher is really just a facilitator. The tutor is just a facilitator. So it's very, very difficult to get that right. It's not impossible. We did have tips for them, especially because there is quite a lot online. And here I come back to your point. I've been really checking and trying to get as much good practice as possible on that from people that have been doing it, especially in an active learning context. Because that was the key for us to get hybrid working not in a traditional lecturing context, but really in an active small class context. So I got quite a lot of tips. I was lucky, which I could share with our teachers. Nevertheless, I think the fact that they were unprepared, because I think that pedagogical aspect, the design aspect, is very important in getting this right, especially in small class active learning context. That was not the case. And also the technical aspect was not very, very well covered because...
Alexandra.
Yeah.
If I may just ask you, because I'm in the three people who organized this podcast, I'm the academic.
Okay.
So I'm the teacher, huh? And I feel better today. And welcome to you and Maha, because there are three academics against two education technologists. Whew, finally. So you mentioned something that actually I'd love for you to tell us and the audience as well. We assume that we know how to go into this classroom and do the hybrid or combination of both ways. And let's for a moment imagine there is someone who actually has woken up from a deep sleep like Snow White, 18 months, and he or she is actually seeing what's going on now. What would be the tips that actually you would give to academic to consider in preparing or planning for the hybrid teaching? Let's put aside the education technologist play. Let's talk about academics. So let's say what would you tell the academic to pay attention or maybe to avoid? And this is a question to you. And of course, Maha, after you, if you can contribute to that one as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really good question, because it brings me to the main point I wanted to make. Maybe it's better to deal with someone that hasn't seen the past 18 months, because what I would say first is really think about your teaching and think about the student learning. So don't just ignore all the other things. Ignore the context for a moment. Ignore the presence or absence of technology or of learning technologists. Think about who your students are, first of all, and how you want them to learn, and how you can best create this space. And when you want to create a space, you start looking at the tools. But first, I think and that is how I approached people in the beginning of the pandemic, in fact, because they were equally scared of the new context. And I said, don't think about technology. It was really counterintuitive because everyone was super scared about technology. But I said, no, it's good teaching will be good teaching, online, offline, hybrid, regardless. So focus even more on what you want the students to learn intentionally. We sometimes forget that in the classroom. So focus intentionally on what you want your students to achieve and how you can support them. And for that, you need to know very well who your students are. And of course, all the other things come from that. But I would say definitely focus on that and disregard technology for a moment.
Great. No, I think it's really maybe counterintuitive because you would think, technology, I have to get to know my Zooms, my Teams, my Blackboards or whatever. But obviously, it's again the audience and your mastery that is actually important.
It's just triggered something that I used to work in video production years ago before I got involved in learning space design, and I remember someone said, "If you give someone a first aid kit, it doesn't make them a doctor," and that's always stuck with me because just because you have the tool doesn't mean so you can use it. And I think that's really true of what you're saying, Alexandra, that focus on the students' experience, the learning, rather than the technology. Yes, you've got to be adept with the technology, but it seems to me, from what you're both saying, it's all about that relationship you have with the students and that community that you're building.
What Alexandra said, yes, and. So Tim Fons has a really interesting model, and I'm sure Alexandra has seen it, where he says it's not just saying, of course, technology before pedagogy is highly problematic. Saying pedagogy before technology is better, but you actually do need to think about both, and I'll tell you why. Because the technology may be hindering your pedagogy if you're not using it right. And so here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say like three broad things. The first thing is, a lot of times when institutions set up something like dual delivery, they may be setting up the technology to work well for lecturing mode and not the problem-based active learning classroom that Alexandra is saying. So my institution did this very strange thing where they didn't have a lot of money. So they focused on the instructor's mic, but not on the mic for students who are remote to be able to hear students who are in the class. And then they ended up saying, oh, this works great for lecturing mode. So now after, 20 years of telling people that lecturing is not good pedagogy, now we're telling them lecturing is good pedagogy for this modality. And that's ridiculous, right? That was the people who made the decisions about the technology didn't talk to the people who are responsible for the pedagogy. And we ended up with this ridiculousness, right? The second thing is, as you're designing with your pedagogy in mind and what your learning outcomes are and thinking about your students, thinking about the importance of this hybrid mode in terms of both your interaction as a teacher with your students and also the students' interaction with each other, sometimes you may need to rethink how you were doing something to fit that mode because of what the technology restrictions and affordances are. So for example, for this group work kind of thing, would it maybe make sense to work in pairs so that people in the class work with each other and people online work together in breakout rooms, for example, and then regroup as a group where there's a representative who comes close to the instructor mic, for example. So when you know what the restrictions of the technology are, I think you need to change not your foundations of your pedagogy, but how you're applying it given the kind of configuration that you have.
Yeah.
You know, and then the third thing is being aware of the ways that the technology may create inequalities. I have a very quick exercise that I do in the workshop, and I tell people, I show a picture, a very colorful picture, and you can try this, like if you find any picture that you're not used to on your screen, and I tell people, notice all the red things on the picture and then close your eyes after like a few seconds, all right? And then when I tell them to list the red things, of course they list a lot of red things, and I say, keep your eyes closed. Now tell me what were the blue things. And now most of them don't remember what the blue things are. And I tell them, this is what's happening when you're in dual delivery modes. You're seeing the students in the class, you're feeling their energy, you can hear them clearly, you can see their body language. And that automatically will bias you to focusing with them more and responding to them in terms of like even the way we are when we teach, when we slow down, because we can see that our students are confused without even asking them. When you're fully online, you know that you need to ask all the time because you know you can't see them very well. So in dual delivery, sometimes you need to do that. And the very last thing I'm going to say is I know that a lot of people after experiencing dual delivery realize that sometimes online is better, fully online.
Maha, that's very good to hear, actually, the last point about the institution. I think maybe it brings in a next question from James. James.
Yes, thank you, Ivan. Yes, that's very, very poignant point there, Maha, and something that I've experienced being in a different part of this situation. I come from a learning spaces background, and what I try and do is interpret academic learning requirements and convey that to the people who install the technology, who specify the equipment, and try and make it work both ways. So speaking both languages. And that's something that Dom is involved in heavily as well. We both come from a pedagogy of space approach to learning spaces. And I think that that's actually what you're just saying, Maha, is really important, because we've experienced that one of our first spaces. One of the key things I said we need is two cameras, and we need microphones everywhere. We got microphones everywhere. They work really well. Students in this space can be heard by those online and vice versa. But there's only one camera because there was a budget restriction. So they can only see the academic talking. They can't see their fellow students in class. And although I think sound is probably more important than video, that video view of the students provides a reference point. And it helps with that, building that relationship with your two audiences. We could talk for hours on this, but what I want to do is pick up on your last two points, both of you, on how do you think that and Centers for Learning and Teaching can more effectively support staff with this live synchronous learning and thinking about the equity and thinking about the importance. But what key things, maybe what two key things could Centers for Learning and Teaching provide for academic staff?
Yes, thank you. Great question. And I'm happy that we arrived at the institutional aspect, because this is definitely key. And no matter how much we want personally to support and to share with teachers, the institutional support and structure is very, very important here. So, of course, Centers for Teaching and Learning is a broad term. They differ a lot in different institutions, from, I don't know, one or two people unit to big 20, 30 people, and also in what they do, they differ quite a lot. Some centers for teaching and learning also include technical support and some don't. So I just want to mention that, because what I think in terms of support, I will take your question in terms of broad support, institutional support that is needed. Maybe the Center for Teaching and Learning in some institutions only delivers the pedagogical part.
Yeah, I should have been clear. Yeah, it's the pedagogic support.
It's fine. I will...
Not phoning up the AV technician, but yeah.
Exactly. But it's interesting. It's really part of a research I'm doing now. What are these centers doing and how these tasks are split sometimes between different units, because that creates problems. Because as Maha said, I think it's important to bring the two types of support together, pedagogical and technological. But it doesn't happen in all cases. So let's talk now about an ideal situation, because I feel that for hybrid teaching, for successful and effective hybrid teaching, it's really important to have the two types of support combined and well coordinated. At least if it's not the same unit delivering that, at least coordinated, that people speak to each other, or if in case, in some cases, it's the same person. In any case, so that's not a problem. But my point is that we need to support both at the same time. So the pedagogical aspect, trying to give confidence to teachers that they can use the approach they want to use with their students also in this environment, and showing them possibilities, options, how to do it, examples, working on ideas with them and so on. So that's why I said building confidence, not only knowledge, and working with them on trying to get through their students in this environment. And the second thing is definitely, and equally important, I would say, based on my experience, the technical part. And again, they have to go together, because if you only look at the technical part, you might set up a perfect TV-like studio, but you still can't teach in that environment. So there needs to be both of them together. And unfortunately, that involves a lot of resources, and not many universities have this type of resources or want to allocate this type of resources. And even worse, as Maha said, in some cases, the people who make the decisions for where to allocate resources and what platforms to buy do not consult any of the people that actually get to use it, teachers or students.
That's absolutely right, because that's been proved at City University, exactly that, what you're describing. Maha, have you got some experience you could share with us on this?
Well, first of all, everything Alexandra said, every single thing she said. And then I would add, I think, two elements. One of them is listening to students and getting feedback from students all the time, and also recognizing the why. Why are we doing this? Do students understand why we're doing this? Do they appreciate why we're doing this? When the majority of things had been online for a while and dual delivery was an option so that they could come to campus sometimes, they at least appreciated coming to campus, even though they weren't learning so well when they were remote. Now that almost everything is on campus, but we're doing the remote, the dual delivery because of class sizes in some classes, but most of their classes aren't, the students are not appreciating it as much because they are on campus. Why are you doing this to us? So those things are important, always keeping your fingers on the pulse of how students are feeling, maybe observing the classes sometimes. We've done some of that when there weren't so many of them. And you know what Alexandra was saying is sometimes you know theoretically something should work in a particular way, but in practice when we see it, we realize what's going wrong. We discover that professors are trying something different because the technology is not working, but they didn't report it. So always being in touch and getting feedback from both the teachers and the professors.
Just to completely agree with you and say that something I work on with teachers quite a bit is how to communicate better and set expectations. And this is exactly, I think, what concludes this part of the discussion. I think it's really important, especially when we use technology, and I noticed it in the past 18 months, to actually communicate even more explicitly and clearly to students. And with hybrid, it has been, at least in our institution, a little bit strange, because at least last year they could communicate, okay, this is our model online and you know, fully online and that's it. And could get into the mode slowly. But this semester has been really hectic so far and a bit chaotic, I would say, because teachers didn't understand themselves how the mode works very well. They were not confident, as I said before, with this modality, and therefore they couldn't communicate that clearly to students, which is really, really crucial, I think. So communicating and having this dialogue so that the students understand why we are doing things in a certain mode and why it could be beneficial for them and how they could engage. If that's not clear, that is really a big setback.
Great, Alexandra and Maha. Thank you for your comments on this. And now a crucial question for me in perspective of me being academic. Friday, in 2 days' time, I'm going to teach hybrid group of 47. I have never done it before. I'm going in the classroom. One top tip you are going to give me to survive these 4 days of block teaching. Alexandra, shall I fly away? Shall I go away?
Yes, run away. Okay, so 47 students, you said. And do you know how many will
seven,
be in which
seven,
mode?
Seven in the classroom and 40 online.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, okay, that is tough. I think for that reason, you should just call in sick and be online as well. I'm joking. I just feel that in that case, it's definitely worth being online, but we experience the same nowadays. So it's pretty common because more and more people get ill, unfortunately, and stay home.
I
think it's just being mindful at every moment in the classroom. Be mindful of where people are, and like Maha said, it's very likely that the seven people in the classroom will take all your energy. And it's easy to forget that 40 are not there. But I think a pitfall would also be to stay with the back to the students in the classroom and focus on the ones online. So what I would do is, I think it would be almost a mindfulness exercise to able to not in a chaotic way switching from one to the next, because I think that can be a challenge too. But addressing and including all of them. But I think Maha might have really more practical ideas.
Thank you, Alexandra. Maha,
is there any
hope for me?
One tip. The most important tip is to have a plan A and a plan B. If you've never taught in a class like that, make sure that if something might not work, that you have another way of doing it and making it work. Good. That's the really important thing here. And the other thing is, I'm going to say something that I think is fundamental to professors in times of uncertainty, and it's having imagination. And as a faculty developer, I think my role is to foster and nurture your imagination. But if you don't have someone in your faculty development center who can help with that, you may just talk to a colleague through your process of thinking about how you plan to do this class before you do it, because someone else might notice something that you didn't notice.
Great.
So think about, this is what I'm planning to do, and they might have suggestions, and have that in mind. And also check in with the students every few minutes.
Good, lovely. It's like flying. You have the alternative airport. If something goes wrong, you just land.
And you put the microphone on and you talk to your passengers on the plane about how the ride is.
Yeah, you are very cool, and you talk to them in a very nice and casual way.
We might experience a few bumps on the way, but we'll be fine. Okay.
Exactly. Very good association. I really like that metaphor.
Believe me, Alexandra and Maha, I'm going to think of all of these and remember your tips Friday morning when I walk into the classroom. Over to you guys.
Well, thank you, Yvonne. I think we're going to watch this space and see how you get on Friday. So we expect some social media activity. Just moving towards the latter part of our conversation, I'd like you to gaze at your crystal ball now and put your binoculars on and ask you first, Maha, what is the future in this hybrid dual delivery mode for higher education from your point
of view? So I don't need a crystal ball for this because I know what my institution's planning to do. I'm on the Horizon report, so I know it's in the future for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of decisions happen in higher education for financial reasons, because they're trying to make more revenue or increase the number of students or increase the reach to students who won't travel, or just get ready for future uncertainty, which is not a bad reason. But there's a lot of reasons that may not be pedagogical that higher education institutions will want to do more of this, I think, in the future. Professors in my institution who have used it this semester are saying, I'd like to use it in the future because, you know, students get sick and I want them to be able to be part of my class. And that's a good equity and flexibility consideration, especially for, I would say, in the future, without a pandemic, especially useful for graduate students because they have life circumstances, they may travel for work or they have sick kids or all those things. So I think it is a direction that I expect a lot of institutions to go for. I don't expect that they will have funding to do a very high tech version of it. And that's, again, why we need imagination, because I don't think we should be spending a lot of money on technology. We should be spending more money on humans to support this process, like a teaching assistant, for example, for everyone who teaches this way.
Good point. Thank you very much. Really good point. Alexandra, what do you see in the future, whether that's the near future or long-term future?
I'm quite split here. I mean, I agree with everything that Maha said, but of course, I'm split because I'm trying to think whether I want to say what I want to see in the future or what I think I will see in the future. Because what I think I see in the future is narrow-minded return to how things were, which anyway is not how things were, but that's beside the point. And in the sense that technology will keep being used just as an emergency hammer, and that's it. And therefore not well planned, not well designed, and not well supported. So a bit against all the things we've been talking about for 40 minutes. What I would like to see, and again, it's up to people like Mahat and us and you guys, all of you, partly also up to higher education management, to really give a more strategic direction to this and to focus on a more intentional use of technology in the classroom and in different modes outside, beyond the classroom as well. I'm not seeing this at many institutions at the moment, but I don't want to completely lose hope, also because I don't want to end on a negative note. I think we can do that. Like Maha said, we are working with people, trying to nurture our imagination, trying to support as much as possible in the given conditions. What I also want to say is that when I talk about intentional and purposeful use of technology, I also mean not only the hybrid simultaneous mode, but I mean use of technology also in more asynchronous environments, of course, with the same aim to support, to include as much as possible our learners, to think about equity and to really give the chance to everyone to learn as effectively as possible.
Because it's not in isolation, this use of technology. And I'm just going to come back to Maha for a response. But just before I do, I really appreciate you both using the word equity. When I started looking at this in response to the pandemic last year, started to think about a solution, technical solution, but also a teaching approach, and we called it the equitable model.
As you've picked up, no doubt, aviation metaphors run through this as a thread through this podcast, obviously with one of our aviation professors on the as one of our presenters here today, Ivan. We ask the same question of all guests at the end. So you imagine yourself, you imagine a spectrum where on one end you see a fight which is running away from the idea of hybrid teaching, going as far away as possible from it. And on the other end of the spectrum is flight. We're taking that as you're running towards it. You're taking off with this idea of hybrid teaching. Short fire answers, where do you put yourself on the spectrum of fight, run away from, or flight, take off with? And we'll go Maha first and then Alexandra.
Going with the aviation example, you need to check what the weather forecast is like. So it's not one answer for the entire institution for every class. It depends on the weather. It depends on the particular trip and the number of passengers and what kind of needs those passengers have and how long the trip is. If you have a pregnant lady, maybe you don't want the 24-hour flight. So I would, yeah, that's my answer. It's not one answer. It has to be nuanced. And sometimes you will just choose flight and sometimes you will choose not to.
Perfect. Thank you, Maha. Alexandra.
Good one.
Very nice. I don't know if I can go on with that metaphor, because my first, when I saw the question, my reflex answer was run away, fly away as much as possible, because I've experienced it not maybe in the best mode possible, the hybrid mode, but like she said, I think we need to be more nuanced. So I think I'll just wait at the gate a bit longer and see which flight is worth taking and which is worth avoiding, and looking at all the conditions that Maha mentioned.
And prepare the pilots.
Yeah, but we prepare the pilots. That's what we do.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying one of the biggest problems is not preparing the pilots and asking them to make a plan in a very short time and expecting it to work. This makes no sense.
Yeah, no, that's not the flight I want to take.
We also
need aviation is infectious, I can see.
It is, because we need to think about the ground staff as well.
Yeah.
Have they put the suitcase on the right plane?
Or if they're all on strike, there is no ground staff. That's sometimes very dangerous.
Now you're giving me ideas.
Okay, so we're going to, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation for us. I'm sure it's been for our listeners as well. We're going to draw it to a close now. And my final point to both of you, I'll go Alexandra first and then Maha, is there anything that we've not asked you yet that you would like to contribute to the conversation? Alexandra, what's the one burning point that you've not made yet?
I think we've made more or less all the points, but I think it's more, and I think we touched on it, but it's more a framing issue. And what frustrates me most at institutions is that the discussion is not even framed right most of the time. We talk here a lot about equity because, of course, Maha is here and we all believe in this truly. But unfortunately, like James, I think, mentioned, this is not even the way the whole thing is framed at our institutions. Nobody almost ever talks about that. So I think it's really important. Yeah, it's just about what platforms to buy, how to make things more, you know, cost effective and stuff like that. Maybe just paying lip service to student learning, but that is not even always translated into reality. So I think we need to move the discussion, like, I don't know, subversively sometimes, to move the discussion in this direction. And I think that this sort of podcast and discussions are very useful, but unfortunately, it's not a mainstream discussion or approach.
Maha, you get the last word.
Yeah, just building on what Alexandra just said, is that the people who set the vision, first of all, may not have a proper vision, or they might not have good reasons for their vision, and then someone else is responsible for implementing and achieving those outcomes. But they were not part of the initial conversation so that they could catch things early on. So I think, I know we don't always have time to do this, but we also need to create time when it's needed to be able to do these things thoughtfully and mindfully. So I think it's not something that you forgot to ask. I think it's something we sort of did talk about in the middle, but I think it's this element of collaborative building of these things so that people can be on board. And you're asking sometimes for a culture change, and sometimes it's just a temporary thing. If it becomes something that needs to be a culture change, you really need to take your time to get people on board and do it thoughtfully with that kind of nuance that usually administrators don't have time for. And I don't mind if they don't have time, but just give us time to work with the people who are going to teach to help them do it well. So that in the end, I mean, I was writing in the chat with the aviation example, the passengers might go on strike, the students. And then what do you have, you know?
Quite. So an encouragement for everybody to work together for this approach. Thank you both ever so much for your contributions in this conversation today. It's been absolutely fascinating. And we look forward to seeing what this podcast stirs up amongst our listeners as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Really enjoyed the conversation with all of you. And Ivan, let us know how your class
goes. Well, yeah. I will let you know how it went. I'm already trying to look forward and do some mindfulness exercises.
Thank you, Alexandra. Thank you, Maha. Fascinating conversation. I think we could talk for another hour. What's really interesting about this series so far is the conversations spark other thoughts, other questions that we haven't got time to ask, but I think are really important. As Alexandra, you just say, you know, because since the pandemic, it's been a sort of reaction. And how do we fix this problem at the moment? What we really need to do is build on this for going forward. And where that going forward lies might be in specific areas, specific demographics. We don't know where it's going to go, what it's going to lead to. But I think all this conversation really helps, if only to build a community of practice. So if I would love to carry on conversations with both of you as we have with other guests. So
definitely would love that.
Watch this space and thank you again. And I do hope we get to speak to you again, see you again online, if not
in person. Take us on your flight again. That was fun.
I'll bring you on board.
Thank you so much.
Well, gentlemen, I really enjoyed that conversation. I thought that was really enlightening. And as always in these discussions with our guests, I just find I learn so much as well. Yeah. And it was great to be able to bring people from completely different continents together as well and find commonality in the experience, I felt.
Absolutely.
And enthusiasm as well.
And enthusiasm too, and also obviously similar problems, challenges that we're facing collectively across, you know, the higher education sector across the world. Mm. Ivan, any particular observations or reflections that you have?
I think I while we have been talking just a moment ago with our guests, I said finally I have been academics have been actually larger in number than the education technologies, but it's not a negative connotation. And I found, starting with Alexandra and also supported by Maha's discussion, the attention to the well-being of the lecturer, of the academic, that can be overwhelmed with the situation and has to think about the plan B and his or her own mindfulness when we talk about delivery of the content itself. And this really aligns with my experience so far. It is needed to be empowered and also to be made known to the academic jumping in this deep end of the hybrid teaching of the potential pitfalls and how to go about them. And I think people who are researching, like Maha and Alexandra, these topics are in a good position to share this with the people like us and for us to bring this to the attention of the world. James.
Yes, absolutely. A couple of things resonated with me. The main one was Alexandra talking about equity. I think Maha also mentioned that as really key, that it's very easy to forget one audience over another. Logically, it's easier to forget the online audience. Thinking back to my own practice, our own discussions, Dom, that we had last year when we were reacting to this epidemic and how to create opportunities for hybrid learning due to the pandemic and restrictions. We developed something I've called the equitable model to get the word equity out there. That's the really important thing, not to lose people, not to disadvantage people, to give students voice. And we heard that from our episode 2 with Peter Jameson, the importance of the student voice. So that was really key. And something else that both of our guests talked about, fascinating examples, but was this idea of the relationship with the students, the students' experience, the building of that relationship, building up tasks and coming from their background of supporting learning and teaching, is how you build that relationship. And from my own point of view, I think that would also include the content. Very thought-provoking, Dom. Totally agree with you.
I think it aligns also with Owen and his take on how he, in the last episode, episode 3, how he at St. Andrews checked with students along the line of timeline of developing this particular challenge in the last 18 months, as we keep saying, how they feel about the whole delivery, and just to see whether is it a way to make it better or maybe to make it less intrusive in their own learning.
Yeah, and Maha said that as well, didn't she? She said, keep checking. That was part of the advice I think she gave, was to keep checking in with your students all along the way.
It's quite different from sending out an end of module evaluation and going, was that all right? It's you need regular rhythm of checking in with people and seeing how things are going on that. I was quite interested that we got both of our guests came at this with different experience sets. So obviously, as Maha alluded to, I've joined some of her conferencing events remotely, where there's been a kind of hybrid part of a conference. So I've experienced things from that side, and she was one of the facilitators of that sort of thing as well. And obviously that's given her a lot of experience in working with hybridity. Alexandra is coming at it from the perspective of somebody that is facing this as a question now. How do we work with these new and emerging challenges? What do I advise staff on how to deal with these sort of things? And there were a few really useful things that came out of that, I think. One, again, this chimes with our experiences of working with learning spaces at City, was that you need basically multiple stakeholders to make this thing work. And that's from, across the board. Mm. It's not just teachers and students.
And our analogy of the pilot, the academic, the students, the passengers. We also talked about the ground crew, air traffic control.
Aviation is creeping in.
But all of this stuff keeps it in flight, right?
Exactly. But it is, you're absolutely right, multiple stakeholders. And it's a holistic approach. And as Yvonne talked about, the mindfulness aspect, I like that as well.
Mm. I also liked, Maha made reference to an infographic or a framework that has been shared on Twitter by Tim Fawns, where he talks about the illusion of whether technology drives pedagogy or pedagogy drives technology. The reality of this is that there's a sort of mutual shaping of each by the other, as well as multiple other factors as well. And that the skill that comes in there is not so much choosing the right tools or choosing the right methods, is being able to configure, design and orchestrate things.
And this is really something that resonates with me as someone who is delivering the content and maybe not involved primarily into the design or technology side. Because coming again to our example of early engagement with you, Dominic, I haven't thought of these things. And now, having heard about this from the practitioner, from someone who is researching this, I'm finding it very useful, very, very, very helpful. And I hope it's going to be the same for our listeners.
Which brings us to an end of this particular episode. Thank you very much for listening. We hope that you found our discussions today useful for you in your practice, wherever so you might be across the world, experiencing your first taste or being an old hand at hybrid teaching. You can reach out to us via email if you're interested for guesting or passing on some comments. That's teaching here and there podcast at gmail.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter as well. We are at that hybrid pod, and we'll put both of those contact methods in the show notes, along with any other useful links from Maha, Alexandra, Tim as well that we've mentioned. Thank you very much. We will see you again for episode 5, which will be around as an early Christmas present for those of you engaged in teaching and learning in higher education. Thank you very much for me.
And thank you for me. And I look forward for our next episode.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And thank you to those of you listening. We look forward to the next episode of Teaching Here and There.
Teaching Here and There is a podcast brought to you by PSR Production. It's available to listen to on Apple Podcasts, Anchor FM, Spotify, and any web browser.